Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. We believe small actions can have great impact. Take a small action today. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Now, after what felt like the longest leadership contest in history, it is Liz Truss who will replace Boris Johnson as UK Prime Minister tomorrow. And she paid emotional tribute to her predecessor in her acceptance speech.
And I also want to thank our outgoing leader, my friend, Boris Johnson. Boris, you got Brexit done. You crushed Jeremy Corbyn. You rolled out the vaccine and you stood up to Vladimir Putin. You were admired from Kiev to Carlisle.
Well, for more on this, we're joined now by Sir Roger Gale, who is the first Tory MP to submit a letter of no confidence in Boris Johnson. And you're welcome, Roger, to the programme again this evening. I know you backed Penny Mordaunt, who was eliminated 6 weeks ago. So what's your reaction to this news that Liz Truss is your new leader and will tomorrow be Prime Minister?
I wish her well. She's taking on an almost impossible task. If ever there was a poison chalice, this is it. And she is going to have her work cut out to, as she said in her speech, deliver, deliver and deliver. But that's what she's going to have to do.
Do you think she can?
I think she can have a damn good try. I mean, I am not certain that this problem is solvable, but it has to be done. And absolute priority has to be the cost of living and the cost of fuel and getting help to those who really need it. And that means vulnerable individuals, but it also means small businesses, care homes, hospitality business. I mean, it is a Herculean task that she's got. And I just hope that she puts a good team around her to give her the support that she needs to get the job done.
For an Irish audience, I think most people would have been long familiar with Boris Johnson before he became British Prime Minister. Now, I think Irish people are quite familiar at this point with Liz Truss, but perhaps less familiar than they would have been with, for example, Boris Johnson. So how would she compare to her predecessor, do you think?
Those comparisons are odious. I mean, they are two totally different kinds of personality. I mean, nobody would deny that Johnson was not larger than life, because he was. He made a name for himself as mayor of London. But before that, of course, he'd been reprimanded by newspapers for being economical with the truth. And that is, I'm afraid, a shadow that was cast over the whole of his administration. Simply, his relationship with the truth was eccentric, to say the least. He had to go. Do I take pleasure from that? No, of course I don't. It's a great shame that somebody who had a great deal to offer also was so flawed. But I think that Liz Truss is a very different kind of person. I hope and believe that she is plumb honest and straightforward. And I think in the troubled times that are ahead of us, a degree of fundamental basic decency and honesty are probably what is needed if she's going to carry the British public with her. And remember, it's now the British public that she has to carry with her, not the Conservative Party.
Ideologically, though, where would you place her? Which previous Tory leader do you think she'd be closest to?
Well, that's an interesting question. She has tried to sort of brand herself a bit as Margaret Thatcher Mark II. I'm not sure that a Margaret Thatcher tribute act is what I would actually want in my prime minister. I hope that she will be her own person. She is she's a born-again Brexiteer, having started out as a Remainer. Well, that's all right. I mean, people are allowed to change their minds. Philosophically, she probably is to the right of the party. And I hope again that she embraces the One Nation Conservatives within the administration that she's going to form. If she does that, she'll get, I suspect, support across the board. If she doesn't, she may find she has problems herself.
Yeah, and you mentioned her change of mind on Brexit, and I can see so many clips circulating on social media today of, you know, when she was supporting the Remain campaign and then flipped. And as you say, people are allowed to change their minds. But would you have any concern that she doesn't know her own mind? She just goes whichever way the wind is blowing?
I don't think that's an entirely fair criticism, because people are allowed to change their minds. I voted Remain. Make no bones about it. But curiously, I'm a Eurosceptic that voted Remain. I voted Remain because I thought that on balance, we were better off economically and in security terms within the European Union rather than outside it. But once the decision was taken, I accepted that, and I have no problem with Mrs. Truss accepting that and saying, right, we've now got to make this work. We have all now got to make it work, and I hope that we will. I do have issues with her over her support for the Northern Ireland Protocol Bill, because I am passionately opposed to trying to change an international agreement unilaterally.
Well, and speaking of that, a couple of developments over the last sort of 24 hours that we're very interested here on this side of the Irish Sea. Firstly, the ITV reporting this afternoon that Liberal Tories are afraid she's going to appoint, quote, the most right-wing cabinet in 100 years, with names like Suella Braverman, James Cleverly, Ian Duncan Smith, Lord Frost, Nadine Dorries, Brandon Lewis, Jacob Rees-Mogg. None of those friends of Ireland as such. Among them. What do you think of that?
I hope that that is not the case. It is certainly true that some of those people that you've mentioned are to the right of the Conservative Party. That does not bode well for those of us who regard ourselves as one nation Tories and who want to see an inclusive administration. But there are other names. I wouldn't, for example, regard James Cleverly as being right-wing particularly. Duncan Smith, yes, I suppose you could claim that. Suella Braverman, probably yes. She may be what is needed at the Home Office if that's where she's going. But I think Mrs. Truss does have to be careful to make sure that she takes the party with her rather than sets for confrontation. I note that Conor Burns, who's currently in the Northern Ireland job, was opening lines of communication with the European Union. That is what ought to be happening. And I think it's all very well rattling a sabre for the benefit of the, when you're playing to the gallery of the Conservative Party and you want votes in a leadership election. But I would hope that a degree of maturity will be injected into this from now on, and that we shall see not necessarily compromise, but certainly communication and proper discussion rather than sabre rattling.
In terms of the Northern Ireland secretary job, several outlets reporting over the last 24 hours that it has already been declined by Sajid Javid, and your own choice for leader Penny Mordaunt, apparently, it's been reported, has also declined it. What do you make of that? Is it seen as somewhat of a poison chalice, that job?
I think it's a job that, if we go down the road we're going down at the moment, will set a secretary of state in confrontation with the prime minister. If it was me, I would have taken the opportunity to drop the Northern Ireland Protocol Bill and to seek to mend some fences with Europe. There is a problem. We all understand there is a problem with the rather dreadful deal that, and let's remember, it was Lord Frost who is tipped for high office again. Mm-hmm. It was Lord Frost that negotiated that deal, took it home. Johnson signed it. They waved it around and campaigned on it and said what a wonderful document it was. Now here they are trying to change it unilaterally. That makes no sense to me at all. I would not have Frost anywhere near my government.
All right. Well, we'll have to wait and see what happens in relation to that. But thank you very much for joining us with your thoughts and analysis. That's Sir Roger Gale, the first Tory MP to submit a letter of no confidence in Boris Johnson. Will the arrival at Downing Street of Liz Truss herald a fresh start for UK-Irish relations, as some hope, or will it signal the beginning of an even frostier period marked by further standoffs and crises? Well, we're joined now by Minister for European Affairs, Thomas Byrne, and you're welcome, Minister, to the programme this afternoon. It has been widely reported that when the Tory party leadership race began a couple of weeks ago, the Irish government was hoping for anyone but Liz Truss to replace Boris Johnson. Is that right?
No, I think in fairness, now the government wouldn't take a view on who is going to be elected as Tory Prime Minister. We have to just deal with whatever is thrown up by that system in Britain and by the members of the Tory party, and deal with them we will. And it's very much in all of our interests to have the best possible relationship, connections and personal friendship between various counterparts, including Taoiseach and Prime Minister, to underpin our relations, but to underpin the peace process, to underpin trade and the people-to-people links between Britain and Ireland as well. I think, quite frankly, in the last number of years, those links between Britain and Ireland have been maybe underplayed on the British side. I think we definitely do need a reset, but I actually think there is an opportunity for that, and that we can all benefit from it, particularly Northern Ireland.
And of course, that is the official position. A change of leader presents an opportunity for a fresh start. But this particular leader is the very politician who championed the Northern Ireland Protocol Bill, which the Ireland has said is illegal, a mistake, shouldn't be happening. So how can there be cause for optimism?
Well, it's certainly illegal, and I think a mistake as well. Look, I think there's no doubt that Boris Johnson was driving that particular piece of legislation forward. There were definitely mixed views at the Cabinet. It hasn't passed yet. It went through the House of Commons fairly easily because I think none of them wanted to lose the whip during a leadership election. So let's see what happens in the House of Lords and then when it comes back to the Commons again. But, you know, even in the space of time that has gone on now with the Tory leadership election, Liz Truss has so many more problems on her and her government's plate. The energy crisis foremost among them. And they must know as well as we do that we can't solve these problems on our own. We have to work together, us through the European Union, but Britain will have to work together with a range of international organisations and states to get through this energy crisis, to get through this Ukraine crisis as well. And I would hope, and I can't say that I expect it, but I certainly hope that the British government will take that particular view as well.
And yeah, I suppose that's the thing, because I heard your colleague Simon Coveney speaking this morning to Morning Ireland, and really all I'm getting from him and yourself now is hope and optimism, which perhaps is I just get the question out if you don't mind. I'm just looking for the reason for that optimism, because I know you're saying Boris Johnson was driving that legislation forward. It was Liz Truss who came up with it, and Liz Truss in her acceptance speech today, when she was accepting the vote to make her Prime Minister, gave a very strong defence and approval of Boris Johnson. She was very close to him. There's nothing in what she has said or done during her time as Foreign Secretary to suggest that she reluctantly came up with that Northern Ireland Protocol Bill. She pushed it and she was enthusiastic about it. Why would we think she would stop suddenly doing that now?
Well, I think anyone getting elected Prime Minister is going to praise their predecessor. That's just standard. So that's going to happen. But she's her own person now. She's her own mandate now. And I would like to think that she will show the pragmatism that she has undoubtedly shown in the past. And that's probably why myself and Mr. Coveney, the Taoiseach, are very hopeful about this, because we've seen pragmatism in the past. She was opposed to Brexit. She's changed party. She's somebody who can change her views. Yes, it is of concern that many of the right-wing Eurosceptic MPs have backed her, and a whole lot of them. But we see from the vote there are definitely different opinions within the Conservative Party. I think it was very welcome that Minister Conor Burns was in Dublin last week. Let's see if that has an impact, but certainly we are hearing softer tones. We heard those softer tones from Liz Truss last year as well, and the difficulty was after that is that nothing really moved then at official level where the technical work gets done. And the Northern Ireland Protocol, it's about peace, it's about no hard border, but it's based on very technical requirements, and it does require officials to get together and to move that on. That did not happen, and that will have to happen if we're going to have agreement.
Well, that would only happen if that's the way they want to move.
Yes.
And yet you mentioned that she had the support of a lot of right-wing Tories, and ITV reporting today that some Tories on the Liberal side wing of the party are afraid she's going to appoint the most right-wing cabinet in 100 years. We've got names like Suella Braverman, James Cleverly, Ian Duncan-Smith, Lord Frost, you've mentioned there, Nadine Dorries, Brandon Lewis, Jacob Rees-Mogg, all possibly in her cabinet. Where does that leave us?
Well, the one of them that I do know is James Cleverly, and he's been tipped for Foreign Secretary. I don't know whether he'll get it or not, but he always struck me as a very pragmatic person, a person who's interested in trying to do good for his country. And I'd be very hopeful if he was Foreign Secretary, because we all know him, because he had the role there as Liz Truss's deputy for a time. And I thought he was somebody that we could do business with. Now, unfortunately, he wasn't in that role for long enough. Mm-hmm. And he's certainly somebody that has her trust. So let's just see what will happen there. But I think we're in a totally different era to the Boris Johnson era, where, quite frankly,
oh, we may have lost the minister's line there. Do we have the minister on the line? Might try and get him back if at all possible. Yeah, we seem to have him on the line, but he can't seem to hear me. Minister, can you hear me okay?
I can, yeah.
Oh, you can hear me there. Great.
I'm sorry, you
just dropped out there for a second. You mentioned James Cleverly, and you were saying that you would have some hope in relation to him, because I know that he was your counterpart for some time as the UK's Europe Minister, and the speculation today is that he's going to be appointed as Foreign Secretary, which was obviously Liz Truss's old job. Now, let's just take a listen, though, to James Cleverly just last June defending the Northern Ireland Protocol Bill.
The government intends to bring forward legislation to fix the Northern Ireland Protocol. As she also set out, the government's view is that such a course of action is lawful and in accordance with international law.
And let's just have a listen to him speaking in May about how to restore power sharing at Stormont.
The DUP have not put forward nominations for roles as part of the power sharing executive. And as I say, yeah, if that circumstance was to endure, I don't think we could credibly say that the principles of the Good Friday Agreement were being discharged or displayed in Northern Ireland.
So you kowtow to the DUP in order to get them back into an executive?
I think it's a very, very unhelpful way of phrasing it.
What do you think of that? It doesn't sound like much is going to change there.
Well, I don't agree with either of those statements, but I do know from conversations that we had that he is a pragmatic person. Now, I'm telling you I'm hopeful. I'm not telling you I know all this, but I am hopeful that I don't bracket James Cleverly as on the sort of extreme right of the Tory party at all.
Fair enough if he's not on the extreme right, but if you just take those statements there, he thinks the Northern Ireland Protocol Bill is lawful. He thinks that the DUP, that the Protocol Bill may have to go through to get the DUP back into Stormont, regardless of whether or not that's against the views of the majority of people in Northern Ireland. What about any of that makes you hopeful?
Well, because I know from our conversations, but what I would say is just in the protocol bill, I mean, it's very, very clear, I think, that they saw that as a negotiating tactic. So, of course, they're going to play the line in the negotiation. Everybody else thought it was completely crazy. The Europeans, the Americans, what are they doing? They're proposing to break international law. I would have told him directly, this is a breach of international law. It's not going to be acceptable. They find it very hard to argue against that one-on-one. That is very difficult for them to do. It's a very difficult position to sustain itself. And I don't think it's sustainable in the context of all of the global crises that they will now have to deal with. And I do think there's pragmatism there. I'm not defending them.
I understand what you're saying.
Has to go.
Let's just play out what you're suggesting would have to happen then. They'd have to pull the bill, which is currently working its way through the House of Commons, deal with whatever the DUP reaction would be to that, and deal with the right-wing members of the Tory party who supported Liz Truss to get her into her position. Why would they... do you understand what I'm saying? I don't understand why you would think they could do any of that politically.
Look, we've seen all this. I mean, at times we've had to sort of just say nothing because it was just so mad what was happening, just for the greater good. But I honestly believe, and I've said this to James Cleverly, and our message always has been, that if the two governments work closely together, not only will that bring really positive benefits to Northern Ireland, but that the parties then follow. But if the governments are working apart, separately and apart, then the parties can go their own way. Okay. They need to be given leadership by the governments together, not by each government separately. And that's our strong message to Britain. And that can give benefits. It can also give electoral benefits. I mean, any person running for leader of a party is talking to a very small subset of the party. Now Liz Truss, if she wants to have any electoral success or political success whatsoever, she's going to have to start talking to the mainstream of British opinion. And the mainstream of British opinion is very supportive of the peace process in Northern Ireland. And I'm absolutely convinced about that.
Do you think they're supportive of the protocol, though?
I think they've accepted that Brexit is happening. I think what they're supportive, and a very easy point for us to make, is that you, in his unpredictability, Boris Johnson proposed the protocol, by the way. He signed the protocol.
Yeah, well, we know that.
It is now a legal document. It's a very easy case for us to make that the law must be complied with, and international law must be complied with. There is no answer to that.
No, I understand, and you've made that case, but that case has not been listened to because they believe, as you heard there in the James Cleverly clip, they believe that what they are proposing is lawful. I tell you what, we'll move on because we're going around in circles a little bit because of the nature of the issue, I think, in relation to that.
And we don't know exactly who's appointed.
Exactly, and we'll have to see who's appointed, and we might speak to you again after that point. I want to turn to the other big news today because gas prices have soared after Russia announced it will not reopen its main gas pipeline to Europe. We know that coalition party leaders will meet tomorrow to discuss the response. Cabinet, I think, is going to decide on the measures on Wednesday. Can you give us any indication what people can expect?
No, I can't. But I mean, obviously, there's going to be government support here, as there has been already this year, in terms of dealing with the actual financial impact that people have. But we're not going to solve this problem until we can have some solution to the issue of Russian gas. So if Russian gas is gone, then we have to get an alternative. We have to make sure that we can supply gas to people, because no matter what measure we do, it is meaningless if the supply is not there. So I think the government decisions are very, very important. But what will be even more important is what the government decides together with all the other governments of the European Union this weekend. And Eamon Ryan will be attending a meeting in Brussels in terms of, do we bring in caps on prices? Do we bring in windfall? Do we decouple the electricity and gas price, which could be very significant in terms of electricity prices, but it brings risks as well. And all these things have been trashed out among governments at the moment. And to me, that is the only way we get real solutions for the people on this issue. And we have to get real solutions. But the problem, as you said, is that there's a man in Moscow has decided to turn off the tap. And we have to then face up to that reality. If the gas is gone, then we very, very urgently have to get other sources. The European Union has been doing that, from Azerbaijan, from Israel, from other sources as well, and ramping up renewables, none of which are going to come on stream very, very quickly. But we do have to ramp them up as quickly as we can.
Is there a question mark now over supply for the winter?
Well, I mean, that question mark has been there all year.
A bigger question mark, I suppose, now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, I mean, the gas pipe has, I think, been turned off for some time. So of course there is. And that's why the European Union has been scouring the planet looking for gas supplies. And there has been some success in that, because you look at Germany, they've refilled their gas storage. We've got new deals with other countries where gas is coming in. There are terminals have been built in various countries to get that gas.
Sorry, Minister, because we've been hearing from the Taoiseach and from the Energy Minister, Eamon Ryan, over the last couple of weeks that we don't really need to be worried about supply. It's the price we need to be worried about. But you're saying we also need to be worried about supply.
Well, because it affects the price. Our supply comes from Britain, comes from Norway. Norway is now the biggest supplier of energy, actually, to the European market. So we're not directly on that tap, thankfully. But unfortunately, if the tap is closed off from Russia, it affects the price where we are as well.
Okay, so there is now a worry about supply, you think, on foot of this.
The worry I have is price. And I think that's the worry that the people around the country have, is price. And that's what the government is focused on, is making sure, first of all, together with other European countries, that the supply is there for everybody, which will try to keep the price down, but also then giving direct support to people in terms of how do we pay these bills this year, because it is going to be difficult. And we are doing absolutely everything we can.
All right.
Nationally,
I just want to get
European
just a little bit of clarity on that then, because I asked you initially, was there a question mark over supply? And you said, of course there is. So is there not a worry about supply this winter for Ireland?
We don't have that direct threat, because our supply comes from ourselves, from Britain and from Norway. We're not on the Russian gas pipeline. But there clearly is a threat to supply from the Russian gas pipeline. And that then has an impact on supply in the European Union, and will have a direct impact on price that we pay in Ireland and Britain as well. And that's what we're trying to deal with nationally as a government, but also together with all the other governments. And that is giving us at least some power, some influence to deal with what is a mega geopolitical crisis, the likes of which most of us have never seen before.
Some of the European governments already announcing what they're going to do. We heard Germany is planning a windfall tax to raise €65 billion. They're going to have implemented, I think, a total of €95 billion in supports by the time they're finished here. Now, that windfall tax is going to be used towards an electricity price break that's going to allow private households to get a basic volume of electricity at reduced prices. So you get your bundle basically of electricity or energy at a reduced price, and then if you go beyond that, you have to pay more. Is that something you think we should do here?
Absolutely, and I actually suspect, and I don't know the details, I suspect our package could be bigger than the German package. And if you look at it per head of population, I mean, Germany, what is it, 80 million people, and we have 5 million people. We were among the highest packages earlier in the year, and there's no government decision made. But what will influence our market, the German market, much more directly will be when we're all working together, and it may well be a price cap or a windfall tax that then goes into to reducing the bills that people have to pay, or, which would be even better, which is, you're talking about this as well, the SEII scheme, getting even more homes upgraded so that people don't need to use as much of this gas wherever it comes.
In terms of immediate measures, though, obviously, to get us through this winter, what about the carbon tax increase that's scheduled to go ahead? Does that make any sense to you when governments are giving different energy supports and at the same time charging people more.
The carbon tax, let's be clear, is a tiny part of people's bills compared to VAT, compared to the actual price that has been charged with gas at the moment. The carbon tax goes directly then into upgrading people's houses, so they've then got lower bills. And all the research has shown that the carbon tax actually helps the poorest in society, because they're the ones, as people on fuel allowance, people on disability allowance, long-term unemployed, they're the ones who qualify for the free upgrades of their houses. And that's what the carbon tax is paying for. So the carbon tax actually is something that helps the poor, the rich pay for it, the poor benefit from it. It is a complicated mechanism, but it is something there that is directly linked to reducing the need for gas, to reducing the need for electricity by upgrading homes. So I'd be a very strong defender. I think it's a pity it was ever called a tax, because what it is a mechanism to get poor people's houses upgraded so that they get lesser bills then in the future.
Okay, just finally then, so you're saying something like an electricity price break is something that you'd be in favour of and you could see happening, a windfall tax you'd be in favour of, and
I have no difficulty with that, but the problem with the windfall tax from an Irish point of view is the windfall tax is basically on the extractors. We don't have a huge amount of them. We have to be careful as well that we don't turn off investment on renewables. But I think we are going to see radical action taken along these lines at a European level. We see the other side of this as well, by the way, in some of the Nordic countries, Sweden and Finland, where some of the electricity firms now need bailouts from the state because they can't get funding from the banks because their interest rates are going up. So there are a whole load of considerations to apply here. But we are doing everything we can to make sure that the impact of this is lessened to the greatest possible degree on all of the citizens of Ireland.
So we can expect radical action to be announced by government this week.
The government is making its decisions. I think the big action will be when the government meets with all the other European governments on Friday as well, in terms of what we'll be doing at a pan-European level. To me, that's for the action of that.
Minister Thomas Byrne, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Tweet at DriveTimeRTE.
Now, Liz Truss has been confirmed as the new leader of Britain's Conservative Party and will replace Boris Johnson as UK Prime Minister tomorrow, as the fourth British leader since the Brexit vote in 2016. We're joined now by SDLP leader and MP for Foyle, Colm Eastwood, and you're very welcome to Drive Time this evening, Colm. What's your reaction to the soon-to-be new Prime Minister? I believe you're warning there won't be much of a honeymoon period for Liz Truss.
No, I don't think there can be. I mean, with the 2 months of wasted time and energy watching the Tory party fight with itself, when people were panicked about what's coming down the line in terms of energy bills, businesses are really struggling to stay open because of the cost of electricity. And workers are being forced to go on strike in all parts of the economy, and of course the Tory party are now just about getting round to looking at some of those issues. I mean, I don't think there's any good Tory government, but we'll see. I mean, she has an opportunity now to move away from the kind of buffoonery of Boris Johnson and be seen as a serious political leader to deal with the cost of living crisis, to properly challenge the oil and gas companies who've been profiteering during this emergency, and to, you know, act like a grown-up in her relationships with the European Union. That would be a departure for her, given the fact that she has introduced a piece of legislation which basically rips up an international agreement with the European Union. But we'll see.
We were speaking to Minister Thomas Byrne on the programme earlier, and he was saying he and his colleagues in government are hopeful that reality effectively will intervene when it comes to that Northern Ireland Protocol legislation, that they have so much on their plate now, the British government, particularly in terms of that cost of living crisis that you're talking about, that they simply can't afford to pick this fight or enter any sort of a trade war with the EU at this time, and that calm heads must prevail. What do you think of that?
Well, that's a very logical position from Thomas. I mean, I hope he's right. It's just not been the case so far. I mean, the reality is, and I think this is what Thomas is probably alluding to, is that if you have this legislation carry on through the House of Commons and the House of Lords and become law, then you end up in a situation where you're in a real trade conflict with the European Union. And that only has one potential consequence, which is higher prices. And prices are already high enough. I'm not sure anybody worth, who understands politics, would want to begin into a general election the next couple of years having made prices even higher. So, I mean, let's hope that common sense prevails. Let's hope that a lot of the nonsense that was talked during the leadership election, it was just sort of internal Tory politics. And let's hope she's prepared to act like a grown-up and solve those issues, and maybe we can get back to actually dealing with the problems that people are facing every day.
Speculation has already started, obviously, in terms of cabinet appointments, and the Northern Ireland Secretary is going to be a key role, as it always is, in terms of looking after what's going on there, but also getting the Northern Ireland Executive back up and running, if that's possible to do over the next couple of months. Reports also that a number of people have already turned her down, offered the role and turned her down. Were you surprised at that?
No, it says it all, really. The Tory party have never really had an interest in Northern Ireland. The British government over the last number of years have used us as a kind of a pawn in a bigger political battle with the internal machinations going on in the Tory party. And everything that they've done so far has been to, you know, overpromise, let people down, and to mess about with the fragile peace and progress that we've had so far. So, I mean, I'm not surprised that none of them want anything to do with it, but somebody's going to have to do it, and of course we'll have to deal with them.
Just finally then, another controversial piece of government legislation that has passed the Commons, is due to go to the Lords this autumn, is the Northern Ireland Troubles Bill, which proposes a form of amnesty for Troubles perpetrators. Now, last week we heard it might not be compliant with the Convention of Human Rights, but there is also pressure on Liz Truss for the UK to leave that convention. So how do you see that issue playing out over the next couple of weeks?
Well, it's clearly not you know, not in faith with all of the international human rights obligations that any government around the world should adhere to. But it's also an affront to decency and honesty and justice, and it leaves behind all of the people who suffered the most because of the Troubles. And I mean, how anybody could think that's a good idea is beyond me. None of the victims groups do, none of the parties in Northern Ireland do. And, you know, we're obviously speaking to the members of the House of Lords this week to advise them on our views on it. I hope that they can put some pressure on this government to try to think again, because all that will happen as a result of this is this legislation will be called through the courts for many years to come, and victims will be further traumatised, and nobody will get truth or justice if we go on like this.
All right, we'll leave it there for the moment. Colm Eastwood, thank you very much for joining us.